And we've got Randall Sullivan with us. We're going to take your phone calls this hour as we talk about the curse of Oak Island. What an amazing story. And welcome back to Coast. This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Randall Sullivan as we talk about his work, The Curse of Oak Island. How long did it take you to research this, Randall? This is a pretty extensive book.
Well, you could say I started back in 2003 when I did the Rolling Stone.
That's a good point.
I drew on that and you know, things that came in the intervening years, but really, you know, I jumped back into it again when they, the people making the show asked me to briefly join the cast in the summer of 2016. So between the summer of 2016 and the completion of it earlier this year was the main push.
Did you ever think you'd write a book about Oak Island?
Well, at the time, I thought I should, you know, way back when I did the Rolling Stone article, I thought maybe I should, but I was under contract to do two other books, and my publisher didn't really, you know, didn't encourage it because, well, they wanted the other two books, but I also felt afterward that, you know, I'd left a lot on the table. There was a lot. Maybe I'd been a little too gullible about the origin story. I hadn't read that thoroughly enough, and actually that was one of the most satisfying parts of writing this book for me, was going back and into the available record, which is actually, there's a lot of it there if you know where to look, and, you know, confirming to my satisfaction that original origin story was pretty much true, that is what happened, and that there were these three young men, you know, Daniel McGinnis and John Smith and Anthony Vaughn, who made this original discovery. And so, you know, I was hosting a TV show for the Oprah Winfrey Network, and they had me opposed to this guy, Joe Nickel, who's, you may have had him on, you know,
he's exactly.
Like a big naysayer, you know, Mr. Skeptic, and he had written something about Oak Island, and he made a couple of points. I thought, I wasn't sure, and you know, I didn't feel entirely confident I had the answer, so that made me want to go back and look at it again.
That's amazing work, though. Amazing work indeed. FDR, the president FDR, was he involved in this?
He was, and he was actually, you know, he was involved in the actual treasure hunt for a while, and he remained interested in it, fascinated by it, into his presidency. I mean, after he'd been reelected president, he was still writing, corresponding with the people who were doing this, you know, like the fifth generation of searchers on Oak Island.
Let's take some calls for you. We've got Larry truck driving in Connecticut, east of the Rockies. Hi, Larry. Good morning to you, sir.
How you doing, George? How you doing, Randall?
Great. Good to have you with us.
My thought on the money pit is that whoever went to all the trouble of burying something that deep in the ground with flood tunnels and everything else wasn't a pirate treasure, but something they wanted nobody to ever recover.
Now, that's a good possibility. What do you think of that, Randall? They didn't want anybody to get it ever.
Yeah, well, I mean, that thought certainly has come to me. I mean, I can remember the first time I stood next to the money pit. I had suddenly this thought came into my mind that, you know, maybe they were trying to keep something down there. And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Whatever it was. I don't rule that out, even though.
What if there are more bodies that they tried to hide?
I don't know, but it's inconceivable that you would do such fantastic work for anything less than a fantastic reason. So, I mean, it can't just be, you know, burying bodies. It has to be something bigger than that.
Let's go to Beatrice in Whittier, California. Beatrice, go ahead.
Yes, hello. Look, I have a wild theory just to throw out there to get your comment on. What if people came to that island hundreds of years ago and they found a pit already there and they were having these negative spiritual experiences and they determined this was like a portal to hell and they put all those things down there to keep it all down and, you know, cross. And I don't know if what was written on that rock was deciphered. I mean, you know, and here people are digging it up and re-releasing it all.
Well, I got to tell you, that's not as
far-fetched.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that idea before. Dan Hensley, the fellow I was talking about earlier, who had the nervous breakdown, his nervous breakdown came when he was standing by the money pit and suddenly was overwhelmed with the conviction that this was the entrance to hell and that he had to get away from it. And I, you know, I had the first, before I ever heard that from him, when I, the first time I was there standing by the money pit, and I had that thought that, you know, maybe there's something they're trying to keep down there.
Randall, do you think the island's cursed?
It's spooky as hell. I mean, whether, you know, it feels to me as if there's something that haunts the place. But, it, you know...
You can feel that, you said.
Rick Lagina has spent a lot more time on it than I have, and he, you know, he doesn't think that. I mean, he thinks that there's ultimately going to be something ritually rewarding, not necessarily in a financial way, but, you know, in terms of historical discovery or something. And so, I mean, that, you know, so it's a totally subjective thing. But, yes, it has always felt to me like there is something spooky, eerie, dark.
Do the brothers live there, or does anybody live there?
Dan Blankenship continues to live on the island. I think he's like, you know, he's 93 or 4 now, and he's been there since the 60s. And his son and his wife, son Dave, and his wife live in a house nearby. And they're the only residents of the island. But I have to say that having all the people who work on the show on the island, all the people who are, you know, part of the the excavations and all of that, it doesn't seem as spooky to me, except when you're there after dark, then it seems really spooky.
Do the brothers who own the island get the treasure if there's anything there and it's discovered?
They do. I mean, they have to share some percentage of it with the Canadian government. I mean, Oak Island's been given a special status or designation by the Canadian government under their treasure trove laws. And things are permitted there that aren't permitted anywhere else. And part of the deal is that they get a piece of whatever's found.
I just don't understand why they just can't get down there without it flooding all the time. It's just too much water, I guess, huh?
Well, it's, yeah, the mess that's been made by all the other searchers is a lot of the problem. I mean, just being sure where the original money pit is, I mean, it's not a for sure thing, because there have been literally dozens of other pits.
Have they ever, with any kind of machinery, even a crane with some kind of claw, have they ever touched the bottom?
Well, they've gone all the way down to bedrock, so I guess that, you know, that's the bottom. But if are they on the exact spot? I mean, they've used caissons, you know, giant metal tubes that they've pounded down into the ground, and then what's called a hammer grab, which is a big claw, to bring things up. And they brought up, you know, some, you know, amazing things. But one of the things they brought up was what an antiquities expert identified as the corner piece of a treasure chest. And they brought up wood that has been carbon dated to, you know, prior to the 1700 and things like that. But they haven't brought up, you know, an answer.
Joe in the Bronx, take it away, Joseph.
Hey, George, how are you?
All well, thanks, Joe.
Good, yeah. So I'd like to ask your guest, Randall, what part of the island is what they believe to be the main money pit located on? And you alluded to some of the remarkable things that Dan Blankenship has found over the years. Can you mention specifically some of those?
Well, I mean, his discovery of those, flooding is coming from offshore, to me, is his most impressive thing. But he's found, you know, specific items, like he found a pair of scissors, hand-wrought scissors that antiquities experts have identified as something that the Spanish used in Mexico in the 1600s. Somehow that was under a rock on Oak Island. He's found old shoes from that predate, you know, that go at least back to the 18th century. And, you know, things like that. He found this, you know, carved rock, you know, that had a G carved in it that was, you know, down inside what was called the Caden Pit, because it was probably part of an air shaft when they were digging the tunnels. But anyway, it caved in and that came up out. So, I mean, I could cite any number of things he's found, but he hasn't found, you know, an answer.
What's your gut tell you, Randall, about what might be there, if anything?
Well, I still say, and you've already disagreed with me, George, but I still say I just can't imagine this being done to conceal, you know, a treasure of gold or silver.
No, they wouldn't have buried it like that.
It just seems like it had to be something. It had to be done for some other, you know, I want to say higher or.
Or what about nefarious reason?
Or, yeah, but then what would the nefarious reason be that would be that much work? I mean, you know, unless you know, there was some dark force you were trying to keep down. But other than that, I mean, yeah, I've heard, you know, there's somebody's tried to make a case that, you know, some people from Ethiopia came there and buried, you know, a kind of a god king or something. But, you know, that's...
That's far-fetched. What about a UFO, that there's a little craft down there or something, and they buried it?
Well, you know, I mean, there certainly are people who have theorized about it being extraterrestrial intelligence. I, you know, what I can't, off the top of my head, I can't say no. I just...
Haven't they lowered sonar or anything like that to determine?
They've tried every, you know, ground-penetrating radar.
Do they get any response?
Well, they find things. They see that there's something there, but you know, our technology is not so sophisticated that you can penetrate. Because one, it's such a mess down there now. It's such a jumble from all the years of treasure hunting and shafts sunk and collapsed and cribbing and everything that, and machinery and everything that's gone down into the ground there. That you know, to sort it all out has become complicated. I mean, I think this year they focused a lot on Smith's Cove, where that artificial beach was. And I mean, they did, you know, for years people tried to create a dam that would hold, you know, back, basically hold back the ocean so you could search there, and everyone got wiped out. But they actually did create one this past summer that helped, literally held the ocean back so they could excavate there.
The three tunnels to flood it, that's like a telltale sign for something. There's something they didn't want anybody to get, even themselves.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that makes sense to me. But then again, it also makes sense to me that maybe there was another way in, that the money pit might have been, you know, one way to get
mm-hmm.
in, that there was, you know, access. But the what became the flood tunnels might have been access tunnels at one point.
True.
They were flooded. So, I mean, and that's one of the things that the people who are hunting there, they hate to hear that even speculated, that, well, how do you know people didn't come and get whatever was buried down there long ago?
Let's go to Eric, truck driving in Indiana for you. Hi, Eric.
George!
Hello, Eric.
Hey, this is Eric, the mind control guy. How's everybody doing tonight?
Fine, Mr. Mind Control.
Years ago, George, I saw a documentary on this. I've only heard it one time. And legend was that Blackbeard the pirate made a statement, and he said, "I have buried my treasure where only Satan and myself can find it." And the story was that he had his guys, they dug a hole like 300 feet deep, and then they engineered it when they buried it and to where it would not be found. And then he had all his guys, or he himself, killed all his guys off to where he was the last man standing, and he was the only one that knew where it was and how to get to it. And apparently, you know, when the shafts were dug where the water would come in, the only way you could get to it is first you would have to cave in the shafts so no water could get to it, and then it would be a long process digging it all back out. But that was a story I heard one time many years ago. It was on some documentary.
Was it all about Oak Island?
Yes.
It was. What do you think of that, Randall?
Well, Edward Teach Blackbeard did make that quote, but that is just that quote is just about the only evidence that links him to Oak Island. There's at least three or four other pirates that would be far more, you know, likely candidates
for right.
pirate treasure. And you know, I was totally dismissive of the pirate treasure idea because of my I thought, well, pirates aren't, you know, what would they do? They did, you know, hole 10 feet deep, maybe, you know, and bury it and come back for it. But then I wasn't aware at the time of the fantastic works, the you know, the tunnel and underground systems that they created in Jamaica and Tortuga, and there actually were pirate engineers and pirate works that were fantastic where they concealed treasure. So, you know, I can't absolutely dismiss that possibility either.
What a great story, though. Regardless of what is down there, if anything, what a great story.
The story of the search itself is pretty fascinating because, I mean, it's the central fascination, really, because the characters are, you know, they're so large and they, and their obsession, if that's the word, with the search and the hunt and you know, how they've pursued, you know, this treasure hunt and basically given their lives to it, you know, it makes for a very compelling story.
First-time caller Cameron in North Dakota is now with us. Hi, Cameron.
Hello there.
Great.
Yeah, I had a couple of interesting ideas there, George. Well, at least I thought they were interesting.
Sure, fire.
Dealing with that, I remembered something you had talked about quite a while ago, dealing with Skinwalker Ranch, and I noticed some similarities with what you were talking about today. For instance, the guy who had seen the beast or whatever it was that was on top of him and pushing him down and saying to leave the area. You know, that sounds similar to some of the things that happened at Skinwalker. Also, you know, there was a sensitivity to digging on the Skinwalker Ranch. Here, maybe something similar. I think it could be something like a underground base, aliens, some creatures of some type. Or maybe something with a certain junctions in the earth where there's some sort of a gravitational flux, an area where there's, you know, a thinner layer between alternate realities, parallel universes, whatever the case might be.
Portals
of some type, yeah, just like that, you know, some of those people had witnessed in Skinwalker. Also, something else I had noticed, a similarity, up where I'm from in North Dakota. My mom was in home health care, and she was taking care of some ranchers out west of where I live. And they were talking about all these cattle mutilations happening in the area. And then come to find out in the news here, I'd say probably a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, somewhere around there, a guy had claimed to have tracked Bigfoot in that same area where there was those cattle mutilations. So I think, you know, it's just like a Skinwalker. You have the cattle relations. You have the hairy thing. You know, they talking about this island where they're, you know, having all these type of, you know, weird instances, and then there's a giant hole. It to me, there's maybe some sort of, I don't know.
Well, it could be supernatural. That's a possibility. We're gonna take a quick break, and we're gonna come back with final calls with Randall Sullivan, author of The Curse of Oak Island. Yeah, maybe it is supernatural. We'll talk with Randall about that possibility, too. Something's going on there, folks. It's weird. I mean, it's very strange. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Randall Sullivan with us. The name of his book, of course, is The Curse of Oak Island. Very thorough work. I don't want to talk about the end of the books, Randall. I never do. But if you went back again, what would you look for?
Well, I'd be hoping that, and I've pushed them to do this, that the brothers would try to do a little more offshore investigation because, like I said, the ocean has risen, and the tunnels, I think, entered at a point that is now underwater. So I think, you know, a more intensive search of the sea bottom, you know, very close to shore, might reveal a way in to the money pit. So that's what I'd encourage. But, you know, when I do go back, I just look at what they've done, and, you know, I'm amazed by the scale of it, and amazed that, you know, they keep finding things. I mean, what makes Oak Island endlessly fascinating is people keep discovering things that are totally unexpected. I mean, the surveyor Fred Nolan's discovery of these five stones, you know, each one weighs about 6 tons, that form a perfect cross. somebody. And then when geologists looked at them, they realized the bottoms were too smooth to explain, except that the stones had to be dragged into position. So somebody hundreds of years ago dragged these stones weighing tons and put them into the alignment, the perfect geometric alignment of a cross. It's like, why would somebody? I have no idea why they did that, but there had to be some reason, and it's stuff like that you just keep endlessly finding on Oak Island.
Could it be a portal to something, to some place?
Well, I mean, you know, could it be? I don't, you know, I certainly, I told you before, when the very first time I stood by the money pit, I had that. That idea came into my mind, that fear, actually. It was actually a...
You could feel it.
I felt a sort of moment of panic and a fear that there was something down there that might get me, you know. And maybe it seemed completely irrational. I tried to put it out of my mind, but then when I heard from other people that they'd had a similar experience, you know, I became less dismissive of it.
Let's go back to the phones in this final segment. Annie in Alabama. Hello, Annie. Go ahead.
I would look for ley lines, and in my remote viewing, I see a huge cave, bigger than you can imagine. It's made of pure gold, and at one time it was accessible only at low tide. People went in. When they tried to come out, they would drown. So they decided to create another entrance. This was before scuba diving. It would be dangerous even with the best scuba gear because... Well, scuba divers don't always make it.
No, they don't, especially if they go into tunnels. So it's the worst thing for a scuba diver to do. So you say there were how many deaths that you know of, Randy?
There have been six, you know, and somehow that's created this legend, and I'm not sure who originated it, that, you know, the treasure can't be found until seven have died. So... I guess, you know, everybody's holding their breath, I guess, to see who number seven is, and I'm sure nobody wants to be that person. But there have been six confirmed deaths during this treasure hunt.
Jeez. I mean, it's what makes it so dangerous down there? Cave-ins?
Cave-ins. I mean, cave-ins or, you know, running machinery deep underground, you know, creates, you know, carbon monoxide poisoning. But it's amazing how many people have actually survived cave-ins and nearly been killed and dragged out covered in mud because they, you know, with a rope, you know, attached around them in the early days. That happened regularly. So it's actually amazing that fewer haven't died, or you know, somebody going, you know, being lowered on a bucket from a pulley and it collapsed and he fell in. Fell to the bottom. That's one death, or a boiler exploded, and you know, somebody was scalded to death. And I mean, it's been an assortment of things.
When you say that some things have been found down there, some kinds of artifacts, what would they be beyond, like you said, a scissors? What else is down there?
Well, I mean, you know, when they pumped out one of the shafts near the money pit, they used air pressure to pump it out, and you know, up came all these scraps of metal. That were soft metal, you know, pretty obviously from an earlier time, and then, you know, they were carbon dated, or, you know, the chief, you know, metallurgy diagnosing company in the world, which is in, I think it's in Sweden or something, said it, you know, it dated back to you know, before 1700. So I mean, to me, the most amazing things really have been the recent discoveries. I mean, the human remains and the Templar cross, but they're, you know, but like I said, you know, Fred Nolan finding, you know, those stones in the shape of a cross and then geologists confirming that they were dragged into position. I mean, that one still stuns me. But, you know, having what they've actually brought up from underground to confirm, it's all tantalizing. I mean, the thing that in 1895, the first time a drill was sent down, they came up with, you know, it was a really primitive drill called a pot auger, and there was just some sort of stuff stuck to it in the mud, and they were washing it out, and there was one little thing they couldn't identify. It was about the size of a kernel of corn or something. They took it to a local physician who had the best microscope in Nova Scotia, and he used his tweezers to spread it out and examine it with a microscope, and it turned out it was a piece of parchment with that had been written on with in India ink with a quill pen and had just a few letters on it. But again, what was that doing down there?
And how old was it? My gosh.
They don't, you know, unknown. Well, it was a quill pen and parchment, so it was clearly dated, you know, to at least the 17th century.
East of the Rockies, Philip is with us in New Jersey. Phil, go ahead.
Yes, good evening. How are you, gentlemen?
Good, Phil. Thank you.
Yes, I had two questions.
Sure.
One, if they travel this far across the oceans and all to go ahead and bury this, and they took the time to, back then, I would figure maybe shovels and picks at best, and they're digging down hundreds of feet deep where they're finding some of these artifacts now. And even today with this material that we have, with machinery and whatnot, we're having one hell of a time trying to get to that depth. And once we get there, we're locked up. And these guys apparently went through it with shovel and picks to begin with. And my second question was, why would they go through the trouble of burying something so deep and so hard to access and never come back for it?
That is exactly the $64,000 question, Phil, that we've been bantering around tonight. You know, why hide something where you might not be able to ever get it again? To me, if you're going to hide something, you do it because you don't want anybody to find it. It's like it's evidence or something, and you're trying to hide something or cover something up. What do you think of that, Randall?
Well, I think that's possible. I mean, I can't entirely rule out the possibility that they did come back and get it, you know, long ago.
Right. Who knows? That's
but,
right.
I mean, the argument against that is the fact that the money pit was so perfectly intact. I mean, it was a shaft that had been dug out, you know, soft dirt in the middle, hard, you know, in between these hard sides that surrounded it. And, you know, if somebody had come back that way to get the treasure, they wouldn't have sealed it all back up like it was. They would have just left the mess. So either if they did get it, they came in another way, or as you say, they were trying to put something down there that no one would ever get.
When do you think it was constructed?
Well, I do have speculation about that, just because based on the early accounts of seeing these old oak stumps with moss growing on the top of them, and then the new trees growing, just and arborists have kind of confirmed this, that if that had happened hundreds of years before the discovery in 1795, it wouldn't have looked that way. So it could, you know, it really couldn't have happened. If those early accounts are true, I don't think it couldn't have happened any sooner than about 1600.
And how long do you think, with primitive tools of shovels and picks, how long do you think it took to dig that hole, and how many people had to be hoisted down and, you know, up and down to do that?
Well, one of the best engineering firms in Canada, as I mentioned earlier, which, you know, they got the schematics of it. They were using basically underground radar to kind of, you know, map the thing. And their analysis was that it took about 100,000 man hours, which they were said would have been 40 men working for a year. So I guess that's the answer, 40 men were, but that doesn't even include the beach. So,
right.
Where at least 100,000 pounds of sand were removed.
And the beach thing could have come later, though, right?
It's possible. That's another thing about Oak Island is you can't definitively conclude that it all happened
at the same time.
At one time or by the same group of people. I mean, it's occurred to me, and I'm not the only one, that you know, somebody, the money pit, you know, I mean, the people, there may have been searchers who were looking for this treasure before 1795.
Was the pit or the hole ever covered at any time?
You mean after it was opened up?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, initially when those boys first got into it and went 20 feet down, they covered it, sort of loosely filled it back in and put branches and things over it to hide it because they didn't want anyone else to know about it. And until it took them several years to find somebody who would put up the money. But they actually, you know, they brought, you know, the money guy there and showed him what they had. And he found investors to, you know, create a real expedition. And so then there were dozens and dozens of people who
Remarkable.
Those last, you know, 70 feet of the money pit before it flooded.
First time caller, Bruce in San Diego. Hi, Bruce.
Hello, Mr. Norrie, Mr. Sullivan.
Good to have you with us.
Yes, well, just to get really right to the heart of this thing, it's clear to me. I mean, we're not up against the occult or the supernatural or aliens or anything else on this island. What they're up against here is transcendent human genius. Whoever designed and oversaw the construction of this thing, we're talking Da Vinci-level intelligence.
Yes.
Now, we also know when this was done. Now, my understanding is that, I mean, the biggest clue we've got to all of this hasn't really even been talked about here tonight, and that's the coconut fibers that were used to fill those flood tunnels so they wouldn't clog up with sand.
Explain that, Bruce.
It was carbon dated decades ago, and they came up with an age of 600 years on those coconut fibers. That means that was all put in somewhere around the year 1400. And it also accounts for the fact that there are no accounts of anybody ever seeing any activity on that island if it was done as late as the year 1600. So it also explains, and it also belies all the talk about pirate treasure, because there was no piracy operating in the New World in the year 1400. So whatever is down there has nothing to do with pirate treasure.
What do you think could be down there, Bruce? If anything,
it had to be something, like it's been mentioned, had to have been brought from Europe. It was the only place. Oh, and the coconut fibers, too. Those have been DNA sequenced. We even know what island all that coconut fiber came from. I don't remember the name of it, but it's like 1,500 miles away. Jeez. And there's like 2,000 tons of it just in the areas where they know the sand has been cleared.
Okay.
That means multiple shiploads and a lot of people.
And a lot of people.
Island. I'm thinking hundreds of people working on that island. And don't forget, this is Nova Scotia. You can't work all year up there. If you're going to get that work done in the course of a single calendar year, you've got about 6 months of time to really do that in a single calendar year.
Sounds like they were hiding something.
They were. And it had to have been something that was so important that they wanted to keep it down there for a long time. This was something they wanted to...
Do you think they ever had plans to go get it again?
There's no evidence that anybody has been down there since it was originally put there. Otherwise, those kids would not have run into undisturbed log platforms as they were digging down. And by the way, I can tell you what those were for.
The log platforms? What
absolutely,
were they for?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those kids saw that depression in the ground only because, my guess, it was late in the afternoon. The sun was coming in at a shallow angle, and that grazing incident's illumination showed that shallow depression.
Interesting. Let's get your reaction, Randall, in the minute we have left. Go ahead.
Well, I one thing I do agree with.
Pretty astute.
Is that those platforms probably were used to prevent the compaction of the ground and to sort of hide, to not make the depression so obvious. I think that is true. The dating of the coconut fiber, well, it's a little wider range than that. I mean, carbon dating is not that exact. It's within often within.
Is Bruce right about the coconut fibers?
Oh, there was tons of coconut fiber, which
good
was
job,
commonly
Bruce.
Used as dummage aboard ships in the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s. But it would have. You're right. No single ship could have brought all that coconut fiber. But I don't necessarily agree with the 1400
time frame.
Date. But I'm not dismissing it. I'm just saying that there's other evidence that isn't consistent.
Regardless, it's a pretty interesting engineering feat, isn't it?
Oh, fantastic engineering feat! I mean that is actually what sort of pointed me to the whole Francis Bacon thing partially. I mean, I remember I was talking to Dan Blankenship, and he said whoever did this was the smartest SOB in the history of the world.
Jeez. Well, I got to tell you, Randall, great job with the book, The Curse of Oak Island. It's a great read, and it's an incredible mystery. And next one you write, make sure you come back again, okay?
I'll do that, George, if you invite me.
You got it. Randall Sullivan, the name of the book, The Curse of Oak Island, available at Amazon.com. And we've got, just go to coasttocoastam.com and you'll take a look at some of the links we've got hooked up with that. Fascinating, whatever is going down there. They hid something for a reason. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.